It is week two out of two of the Max Fun Drive, where we focus on how important membership support is for this show. Our show is owned by us and it's supported by you. And all the shows on the Maximum Fun Network work that way. So it's the best time to join as a member, because depending on the level of support you choose to join or upgrade, we've got some very cool thank you gifts that we only offer during Max Fun Drive.
Don't tell them about that yet. It's a cliffhanger.
Keep listening.
So we'll talk about that in a second. But what I would urge you to do right now before the show even begins is pause this. Go to MaximumFun.org/join and become a member or upgrade your membership. Make sure you check the Dead Pilot Society box. Once again, MaximumFun.org/join. And we'll talk to you after a little bit.
All right, we can officially begin. I'm here with Ricky Lindholm and Monica Padrick to talk about their amazing pilot tales. Hello, Ricky. Hi, Monica.
Hi.
Hello.
First of all, I got to say, the joke that I keep thinking of, it's such a small thing, but that I love so much, is Erica's mom saying, you know, when you buy a whole chicken, you expect it'll come with a neck. It's just, you know, I read a lot of pilots. There's a lot of moms. There's a lot of mom specifics. There's just something so great about that specific. Is that from one of your moms? I just need to know.
That was a Monica joke. Was that from your mom?
That was not from my mom, but it was not from my mom, but I can see her being upset at some expectation that you can't see coming on the phone, like when you're on the phone with her. I'm just like, I don't know. No, that the mom scenes were really fun. Just because we got to, like, it doesn't come across necessarily in a podcast, but like the visual elements of it, Ricky and I just had so much fun working on just like what Erica's doing and what Greta's doing and like what their priorities are and how her mom is just like very level-headed, but is also just like hacking away at ice and like angry about chicken necks and whatever else.
And like, there's like just, a big,
and I'm
a
like lounging branch in a massage chair being like,
my life is, yeah, everything's hard.
My favorite Greta line is when I say I'm hanging with my single friends and she says, are they widows? they're just single.
Yeah. And when that big branch hits her window, I mean, that, you know, she's just, you know, unbothered by that completely. Such a great character. All right. Well, we will get to the pilot, but I'd like to go back a bit. We'll start, Ricky, we can start with you. I mean, you have such an accomplished acting career, but I want to talk to you about the writing part of it and when that started and just, you know, you as a writer. A lot of people probably know you best as an actor, but tell me about just the writing.
It's funny. I think I became a writer because my acting career wasn't going so great. Like it just wasn't, you know, I just wasn't getting lucky. Like I would book a pilot and it wouldn't go, or I would be part of a movie and then no one saw it, or I was working, but I wasn't getting any traction. And I was like, I think I need to write my own stuff. And I started making shorts and things in my 20s. And then after working with Garfunkel and Oates, you know, I loved like being my own boss and not just like waiting for someone to allow me to work. And so I started writing all the time after that.
So, I mean, a lot of, you know, some people will know, but talk a little bit about Garfunkel and Oates and how that started and how you and Kate Micucci started writing beyond just writing the songs.
Well, it started during the writer's strike of 2007, 2008, because we were all out of work and we had nothing to do. And so I wrote a short and I was going to direct it. I was trying to like see what else I was good at. And we turned it into a musical. And the best part about the short was the songs. And so we just kept writing songs. And then we put them on YouTube and people started watching them to our total surprise. And then we're like, oh, maybe we should play a show. And it just sort of went from there. And then after, you know, however many years, we're like, okay, now we want to make a TV show. And so I had to write a pilot and pitch it. And we got to do a TV show. And yeah, it was like a natural progression.
And so writing that for the pilot for the first version of the TV show, was that for both of you, was that the first like script, television script that you guys had written?
Oh yeah. I had to learn like act structure and things where I thought I understood it because I'd watched so much TV, but I did not. I didn't know how many pages it had to be. It was a real learning curve. They kind of were like, here, write a pilot. And I'm like, oh, how long is it? And I had to sort of like, I had to look at pilots that I auditioned for and like learn structure from like reading things from my audition emails.
And it was the same, I'm assuming, for Kate too, right?
Yeah, both of our first professional writing job was the Garfunkel and Oates pilot. The first thing anyone paid us for writing wise.
That's so cool. And so then that first version of the show, you made how many episodes?
I don't remember. Was it like 6 or 8? I have the worst memory and I like a little bit blocked it out where I think maybe it was 6 episodes.
And did you guys write all of those?
Sort of. It was, we had one other person in the writer's room. It was just a strange, we were just learning. Right. You know, you end up rewriting everything. Other people wrote scripts on the show as well.
Okay.
Being vague, but it's deliberate. I'm just like, what else? Can we talk about some other time in my life besides that?
Well, then let's talk about another period. And that process.
That was the first time I got to show run and it was super fun. Like I really, really loved it. And it was a very low budget show and we had to write it super fast. Like the first season, we had 10 weeks to write 10 episodes and then 3 days of prep. And then every episode, we had 3 days to shoot it. And so anyone who's worked in TV knows it's just, that is so fast. And so we didn't really have much time for self-doubt and we kind of just ran with it. We just did it. And it was awesome. We did 3 seasons and it was cool to work with a place like Comedy Central who gives almost no notes. They'll have like maybe 3 notes, like, but it's so little that you're like, okay, I'll do 3 notes. That's fine. But you basically get to make the show you want to make, which is kind of unheard of.
So Monica, let's talk about you and how you started on this writing path.
Well, I had just fled the country during the financial crisis. And during that time in Colombia, wrote a pilot.
In Colombia, so you had fled the country.
I didn't flee the country to a university in New York City. No,
the country. Okay.
Yeah, the actual no. But I was just like floundering and writing a bunch of. I had been sort of a journalist a little bit. I was terrible at it because I didn't love an adherence to the truth, which lent itself to fiction. But you know. You can't get by on not publishing 3 short stories a year in New York. So it was figuring that kind of thing out. So wrote a bunch of stuff. This is, you know, in 2008, whatever. And through a miraculous series of events, because I feel like that's always how it works, got an agent and got a job on the child pornography program Skins, the American adaptation of Skins. So that was my first job. My parents were so worried about me, and then they were also worried about me.
And that's how it was marketed, right? They did market it. Yeah.
Yeah, they're like the child pornography program Skins on MTV, brought to you by British people who don't know what you can put on television.
Okay, but back. And so how did you get that job on Skins? Because
I'd written a pilot about an elderly former Broadway actress who lives in a hotel. It doesn't make a ton of sense that would be the pilot that got me a job on a show about bad teenagers. So, but it worked out. It was a lot of fun.
And but it was, you had an agent that got it to them?
Yes, I had gotten, I had lots of different people read this. And then I had lots of false starts. I was out to dinner with my friend and his dad and his parents. And I was just like the lowest I could have been. And they're like, oh, what are you working on? Which is like the worst question you can ever be asked for me at almost any point in my like career, but just in general, like, what are you working on? And I was like, I guess I wrote this pilot that I don't know, nothing. And they were theater people and interested in this kind of thing. And they're like, oh, let's read it. And then they were very well connected and very lovely people who said, do you mind if we send this to HBO? And I said, no. and HBO said, this is adorable. We're not going to make it, but do you have an agent? And I said, no. And they were like, what else do you have, obviously? And then they, this is Casey Bloys was a lovely, he doesn't know who I am now, but he doesn't realize he started my career. He and Amy Gravitt, who are lovely. But he was like, well, let me pass some of your material on to some agents and see if anyone bites. And one did, Aaron Junkin at WME and Dan Shear when he was there. And then a month later I was writing porn, and it's just the dream. But it was many years before that what am I doing and how do you do this? I don't know.
So you write on Skins, and then what's the next step from there?
The American adaptation of The Inbetweeners, obviously. That's where you go. You go from one British show
Okay. You're pigeonholed, you're typecast as American versions of British shows.
American versions of British shows that genuinely are unnecessary. They speak English in the UK. So we get it, what they're doing. But met great people at both places, really loved it, and didn't work for a really long time. Did a guest writing stint at SNL that I was very poorly suited for, wrote an 11 page sketch with Kevin McDonald, who was a hero of mine. And but he was the other guest writer, and that was very funny. And we wrote the funniest thing in the world. It was 11 pages. And they were obviously like, this is not a sketch. We cannot read this. And, after that worked on Community for a couple of years. So it was just kind of like ups and downs, peaks and valleys. You get it.
When did you two get together?
2018, probably. Yeah.
Okay. And you mentioned before the read, but tell me again, sort of how that connection happened.
We were introduced by Alan Yang. We're both friends with him. And he was like, I think you need to meet this friend of mine. Cause I like working in partnerships. Like I write alone sometimes, but I find it kind of boring. And I think things are funnier when you can bounce them off people. And so we went to a Mexican restaurant, right?
We did. We went to Yes, we did. We went to El Coyote. We had our fix up. Yeah.
And then decided to write a pilot together or pitch a pilot together.
Yeah, we had a lot of similar experiences and similar ideas. This was very much like Ricky's baby. This was very much like she had a lot figured out before we had this fix up. So there was like, it was such a joy to be like plunged into this world where it was like, oh yeah, you've done a ton of the work. I'll join in on this. I'd love to. How fun. What a treat. I'd love it. But yeah, you had done so much work on it, and it was just a matter of like, okay, well, how we have to just sort of pull this together and just be like, how do we move forward? Cause we needed to, you know, activate the various agencies and whatever.
Right. And then I'd had a general with Paper Kite, with Kim Lessing at Paper Kite, Amy Poehler's company. And we wanted to take it to them because our general was so great and I loved Kim. And so we took it there and Kim wanted to do it. But when we pitched it to her, it was like a cable show or a streaming show. It was not a network show. And so she's like, I got to talk to you guys. She took us out for a glass of wine and was like, this is a network show. So picture it as a network show. If they would actually make it, they didn't, but if they had, it would have been really cool and like kind of revolutionary for network TV. And she's like, just imagine it. And then we were sold.
Yeah. It took a second. Cause I mean, I do come from a child pornography background. So I was like, I don't know if that's going to fly, but no, it was, I think she was right in how she was envisioning it. And I think the pilot, I mean, turned out really well and it would have been a great show. But yeah, Ricky and I definitely pushed back on the idea of going broadcast because nothing ever goes. And look,
right.
Nothing went that year also. Nothing. So that was crazy. Mm-hmm.
And what were the changes? Like, do you remember what the big changes are that happened once you decided to make it for broadcast, or were they just kind of line by line, like language specifics, or were there story elements that changed?
It was just basically no nudity and no swearing, like, which I love both of those things. So I was like, okay, I can live without them. And like the story itself didn't really change.
Yeah, the story didn't change and it didn't, it was more of how, like, there was a very funny version of the conversation between Erica and Kyle, where he says he's, you know, he's bisexual and he's only fucking dudes now. And it's Ben, or the original one, Ricky, you remember this, right?
I don't at all.
Okay. Erica and Kyle are like hooking up. Well,
now I remember. Yeah, that's right.
This is why I said we can, like, it's a while ago.
He was like inside me when he's like,
yes, hey, it was like a bit,
yeah.
which we were just like dying laughing over because it was like both realistic and also just like the most like, wait, what?
Wait, now happened? You're telling me? Yeah.
Can we, I get, you're flooded with emotion, baby. I don't know. Like, So things like that definitely, that sort of thing definitely changed, but story-wise it didn't change. It was just, you know, he was outside of her when he told her.
Right. And it was more of a wrap up in the network version where you kind of have to like put a bow on it and be like, and this is what you're going to expect in future weeks, sort of, you know, you need that right. more in the network than in streaming.
Oh yeah. I feel like the sort of wrap up aspect of it or the like set PC aspect of it was a thing we were both a little resistant to.
Yes.
Because it was just like, is this really how anyone okay, fine. Like this, sure, we'll do it.
But it doesn't have a network feel. Like it really, you guys held on to a cable streaming tone, I think.
It was cool. That was Fox. They just like we just didn't get a lot of notes from them. They just kind of were into what we were doing, which was
cool. Susanna Makos was really that. She was at Fox at the time, and she was very like, she got it in the pitch. She was like very enthusiastic in the pitch, which we hadn't seen yet at that point.
No, so she really was like, we would start to say something. She goes, oh yeah, got it. What else? Okay. Yep, get that. Like she was like, just like, okay.
And then she might also be like, this reminds me of a thing that happened to me. Do you remember this? And we were just like, oh, okay. She understands. Like she's just like telling us her stories now. Okay, great. Like, perfect.
Always a great sign. Yes. What else do you remember about how you pitched this? Did you sing it all in that pitch? Were the songs part of it? Was like, what was that pitch like?
I can't remember if we played that song. We didn't sing, but did we play that song or not? I don't think we did we?
I don't know, because the song is devastating. It's really good. And that's the sort of thing that when we took it to Paper Kite and they heard the song, like when Amy and Kim heard the song, we're like, oh my God, like this is like, what a thing to include in this, how this is perfect.
Because I love the Mootsie Brown pilot, and I love that there's that whole song element at the end, and it's just kind of beautiful, and it made the pilot memorable, and I'm like, you can have a song.
Yeah. Oh, no, I don't think anyone was pushing back on it. I just don't think of I don't remember in the pitch if we did it.
I don't think we did.
Yeah.
No, but we pitched to four places, Fox, ABC, NBC, and CBS, and yeah, the ABC one also went well. They were also interested. And I don't remember even how we ended up going with Fox over ABC, but it was cool to have more than one place interested. That was amazing.
And was Amy Poehler, like, what was her involvement? Did she come to pitches? Was she...
Amy is... She is not a name-only producer. She read every draft. She gives notes on everything. She was in every pitch. If she's producing it, she is the producer.
She's fantastic. It was amazing because we we honed stuff so we didn't bring her just a bunch of random ideas, obviously. But when we, she would be there pretty often when we were going over the pitch, she would have great ideas. She was just like, you're very lucky to be in a room with Amy Poehler because everyone wants to see Amy Poehler. So it's like people aren't mad about that pitch.
And how rehearsed are the two of you in that pitch? I mean, is it very scripted? And I say this and then...
Yes, and except you say the Fox pitch where Susanna was like, okay, check, got it. What's the next? Okay. So then we're like, and then all the rest of them were totally scripted.
Yeah, they were, we had... we had two kind of versions of this because Ricky was doing most of the talking because she's the performer and the star, and because she didn't want me to embarrass the two of us, which was and so, but I would have like the sort of everything written out pitch sort of clandestinely near me. Ricky had like a little, like some bullet points. I've done pitches where you're like essentially reading a book report and it's the most miserable thing in the world and everyone hates it. So this was just kind of like, let's try to make it a conversation, but also fulfill their book report needs that they all seem to desire. So Ricky was like using bullet points and sort of like making it very conversational and was like very natural at it. And then if there was any time that I could like jump in with a detail or anything that we might've missed, that's when I kind of came in and did that. It wasn't a lot of like, and now I say this and now you say this. It was a little bit more, I think, natural than that. But yeah, the Fox pitch threw it all out the window because they were just like, all right, what are we doing? Let's talk.
And yeah. Like, okay. So then what? Then what happens?
Yeah. And that was great. That was the best. I mean, it was the best. So
yeah, it's good that when you can roll with that and not get thrown by it, because it is sort of the best thing that can happen, that it becomes a conversation. But if you do have one of those book report pitches, it can just be kind of like, I need to say my things and you're interrupting and I don't know what to do now.
Well, it's interesting because that's the good part about working with Amy and Kim is they ask you all the thematic questions. And so you do so much soul searching about it and you know like why you're making the show and you know the emotional journey of every character and you do so much work and talking that when someone does ask questions, like we had the same answer, like we had it ready to go. It wasn't like a light thing that, you know, we worked on this for a week, like we worked on it for like 4 months and sat with it for a long time. And so when people did ask us questions, it was even better because we knew all the answers.
And I mean, how are those, you know, Ricky, for you, you're a performer, are those rooms just kind of, is that an easy thing? Is that just kind of a fun thing to go in and pitch?
No, it's really hard. It's funny that it sounded natural to Monica because I really spend a lot of time memorizing and I'm not a natural person. Like I'm just like, I need to do a lot of work to make it sound natural. Like I had to work on it a ton at home.
I mean, I didn't mean to say that like it was natural in terms of like Ricky walked in and was just off the cuff. It was like, no Ricky was really prepared.
No, I love that it sounded like that. That's what I wanted. I wanted to know it so deeply that I could sound like I was having a conversation.
Yeah. And you did. It was really effective because it was great.
But I get really nervous and you talk for a long time in a pitch. There's like not a lot of back and forth and you do start to go, am I talking too long? Am I like, can I take a sip of water? Like what, like, yeah, I start to get in my head.
And how much in the pitch are you talking about Ricky? How much are you talking about Erica? Like how much of this are you sort of selling as like, this is my story? Or is it very much like, here's a character that we're presenting totally divorced from who I am?
With this one, we talked a lot about me because, you know, I am a songwriter for hire for animation. And like, I have friends like this. I've had some of these experiences were based on true things. The whole Rachel thing was a true thing. So we did talk a lot and Monica was also like at a similar stage in her life. And we just talked about, you know, how you have these friends because like everyone kept going, how do these people know each other? And we're like, because they're the only ones left. Like everyone else got married. Like it's not, we like love that these people don't have a ton in common. They're friends because they're the only people who go out.
Yeah, they're still available. Which was one of the ways that was like so many of our friends that we still like routinely saw, it was because, oh, they're available to hang out. And we just thought this was so like such a funny, like, and also natural, weird way that like people spend a lot of time together. Mm-hmm. And we got continual questions about like, but did they go to college together? And it's like, no, maybe they met at a party. Like, I don't know.
Like, they just are still around. That's it.
I love that description of Rachel, of just like a woman. She just always runs. Can't remember how she met her, but somehow just always runs into her. It just feels so real.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rachel.
And that woman is in my life. I do. I do. I do run into her, like not during the pandemic, obviously. So it's been a minute, but.
Oh God, I hope she's doing all right.
I'm sure she is.
Hey folks, we're breaking in for just a sec. It's me, Ben, and Andrew, your hosts and producers of this show. And we want to thank you for supporting Dead Pilot Society. And we want to ask you, if you are not already a MaxFun member, please become one. MaxFun is audience supported, which means we are free to make the content you enjoy because people like you contribute.
And we have such a great community of listeners. Nothing makes me happier than seeing comments on social media talking about how much people love these pilots that would never have been heard if we didn't you know, put them on and have them read here on Dead Pilot Society. Here's a couple comments from people that I can read. Carl Thomas Gladstone, he says, what amazing writers, scripts, and performers fighting back against the nose of the world. That's N-O apostrophe S, not N-O-S-E. But okay, fighting back against the nose of the world. I love that. That's like our motto here. We're fighting back against the nose of the world by bringing these scripts back to life. I mean, that's it. That's what we're doing, right? We're just saying like, okay, you know, the higher ups might have rejected these things. We see value in them. And you as listeners see value in them too. Here's one from Chrissy Wong. She says, I recently started listening to Dead Pilot Society and I love it so much. The only problem is I want to watch the shows afterwards, but they don't exist. And yeah, I mean, sorry, that is true. But they exist. At least a pilot read by amazing actors exists here on this podcast, and it wouldn't exist anywhere else. And so just, you know, hearing that from our community, it really means so much to us. And, you know, as a member, you're part of creating the show. You know, we make the content, our audience listens and shares it, and our members provide the funding that makes it all possible.
Yeah, we genuinely could not do it without our listeners. So we're going to ask you that, you know, if you've been enjoying Dead Pilot Society, once again, go to MaximumFun.org/join. Make sure that you check the box that says Dead Pilot Society, and you're going to get some really cool stuff in return.
I mean, membership starts at $5 a month. That gets you all the bonus content. You don't get to just hear these reads. If you're a member, even at the $5 a month level, you get to watch them. You know, we put up the Zoom recordings, the video, and you get to see all our incredible actors.
You can see what Carrie Mulligan's house looks like.
I know. And Richard E. Grant. That's right. And, you know, Rainn Wilson and Maria Bamford. It's all so many people. We've really been doing a lot of sort of guest appearances on other shows this time. And there's some great content. I can't wait to listen to the Depression Mode episode that you did. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, that was really cool. And it's a great resource. I mean, if you're listening to this episode and you are interested in the creative process, and Depression Mode is John Moe's new Max Fun podcast. We did a crossover episode in which we talked about mental health among television writers. And we had a terrific lineup, including Stephen Canals, who co-created Pose, and Rachel Bloom, the co-creator and star of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, two shows that I think really handled mental health in expert and sort of nuanced ways. So it's a great conversation about that. We also did, you and I, Andrew, did a bonus episode crossover with Round Springfield with Ali and Julia. That was a really fun conversation.
It was really fun. I mean, it was sort of ostensibly about the script that got me an agent was a Simpsons spec script written back in the 90s. I got to say, for you Friends fans out there, you know, since I did write on that show, you get a little inside Friends scoop on that episode too, which was pretty fun.
I immediately ran out from recording that and told my wife, listen to this stuff about Joey. So folks, if you give $5 a month, you get that bonus content. And yes, all the bonus content across all the Max Fun shows. Yeah. What else can you get for becoming a member?
Well, if you choose to join or upgrade at $10 a month, you get a Max Fun membership card and a cool pin of your choice. We hope you will choose the Dead Pilot Society pin because it's great. Our pins are always great.
We did a redesign on our logo, which the pin reflects, and it's cool. It feels much more like lively and
look, the Max Fun's taking a break from these pins after this year. Yeah. So if you've gotten pins in the past, you got to complete your collection. So so get your Dead Pilot Society pin at the $10 a month level, and if you join or upgrade at $20 a month or more, you get this year's special gift, which is the Max Fun Take a Minute Tea Kit, which is a custom tin with art by Atomic Pixies, a rocket-shaped tea infuser, and a custom Max Fun blend of tea from our friends at Wishes Tea. Ben, talk about, you've had the tea.
It's a delightful blend. It's an orange tea that is really very nice.
It's the kind of thing when you do take the time to just do that for yourself and just like, you know, it's the afternoon, I'm just going to have a nice relaxing cup of tea. It does. It makes your day better. So that's a pretty cool gift at the $20 a month level. So look, if you're already a member, thank you so much for supporting this show. This show has really helped keep us going during the last 14 months of all of this. It's really, every time we get on a Zoom to do one of these reads with all these incredible actors, it's just such a great community. Everyone's there just because we want to uplift these writers and these scripts that have been rejected by the powers that be, but have so much value and are so great. And it's really kept us going, and you keep us going and enable us to keep doing this thing. So if you want to join or boost or upgrade, go to maximumfun.org/join. But there are so many specifics that make it clear that this is you writing about that some of this is coming from, you guys writing about your lives. Even, I think that thing about like, let's have lunch. Well, lunch actually falls in my most creative phase, but after 4 o'clock, I'm useless. Like, that's a line that's, maybe any writer.
I'm sure I have said that to Monica.
I mean, you have 100%, where it's like, hey, Ricky, you want to, chat about whatever? I'll talk to you after two. Like, whatever.
Well, we were brainstorming because we'll brainstorm together still with each other's ideas. Yeah. Like, if Monica has a pilot idea or I have a movie idea, whatever it is, we'll call each other and do a brainstorm just to help each other out. But it's always after four.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's great. It was so specifically Ricky and so like hard boundaries around it. Just like, no, this, I know myself. This is when I'm good.
Yes.
I've got to maximize this time.
Right.
I can deal with you later.
Yeah. Like, the good parts for me and me alone. Yeah.
And for Monica, how easy was it for you? Cause you guys were really, you have this, you drinks at El Coyote and you, how quickly were you able to fall in when you were writing to like, okay, I can write this character. I get who Ricky is. I get who Erica is.
Well, we had there are a lot of similarities. Like, I'm in my late 30s. I'm not married. I don't have kids. Our mutual friend, Alan, who introduced us, Ricky was like, I don't remember. We met at a party. I was like, the reason we love Alan, wonderful guy. We get to hang out with him all the time because he's available. Like, that's one of the things. Like, that was part of it. Yeah. Well, right now, not as much, but that was one of his defining characteristics, is that he was available. And so we really bonded over what it means to be in your late 30s and a woman who works and is not really like, you kind of look around and you're like, oh, all right, well, what's life now? Because our mothers, when they were 37 or 38, they had teenagers or whatever. Like, they don't have the advice. Like, we really channeled a little bit of both of our moms into Greta. But it was a lot of like, look, I'm here for you, but I don't know what the fuck you're doing. Like, I'm thrilled that you're doing it, but it seems kind of terrifying. What's happening? Like, that was
my
a
parents
little bit of
still
that.
Are not comfortable with the amount of uncertainty in my life. Like, if I have a pitch and you're waiting to hear it, they're like, but when do you hear? And I'm like, I don't know. And they're like, well, what? Like, they don't understand like how, like, you just are like used to uncertainty with everything. And they are still not used to it.
No.
Like, well, they must give you some idea. And I was like, no, they don't. I don't know when I'll know if I got that part. I don't know when it's filming. I don't know anything.
It seems like such a perfect setup for a show for you guys to have continued writing, because you were writing exactly your lives and all the moments, the small moments and specifics of that, which could have been fodder for episodes. I was really impressed by the opening of this pilot, because you guys do something that's kind of unusual. You really just come in the middle of something. And you introduce us to Erica and Adam in a very not expositional way. And then drop this big bomb on like page 3. So we have to invest and care about about Erica, certainly, and that this means something, that she's going to break up based on a coin toss on page 3, which to me, I felt like you did. And part of it to me, I think, is like when Erica starts singing that song, it's so, you know, she just burst into writing a song there that, that connects you to her in a way, makes her so specific. And so that makes that work. I just wonder how much, you know, openings of pilots are so hard. And I'm just wondering how much you struggled over, you know, how to open and landing on that opening.
Ricky had this.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
Ricky, sorry. I just want to give you like such full credit for this, because by the time we met at El Coyote, Ricky had this scene written almost exactly as it is now. Like, she knew how this started and she knew how she wanted to do it. And it was just like, it was so brilliant and so like risky that it was like, okay, you know, and people like at different points, I feel like had been kind of like, does it fit? Where do you go from here? What is the thing? And she was very, I mean, it's so great. Now, Ricky, you can talk. It was there from the very beginning.
That was the inspiration for the pilot. I was dating someone and I was like, what do we do? Like, what do I, and I was like, could I flip a coin? And I had that whole thing in my head. I didn't say it in front of him, but I was like, should I flip a coin? And I did. And I was like, what do I want it to be? And when it was tails, I was relieved. And I was like, oh, I mean, the fact that I was even flipping a coin, like, we should not have been together. Like, that should have been my clue. Like,
yeah, that's a pretty big clue.
That should have been my clue. But it was, yeah, because it was a great person who I cared about. But it was, yeah, I was in my car and I was like, let me just see what would happen. And like, we didn't like break up right away after that. It took a while, but I was like, that was a weird exercise. And then I was like, oh, that feels like a show.
And so that was, that scene really was sort of the seed. That was the inspiration for the show.
Cause like, I don't know, the reason a lot of people are together, like, feels that random. It feels like, you know, not every couple I know feels like this meant to be romantic comedy. Like, a lot of it feels as random as a coin toss.
Yeah.
They're like, okay, I guess I'll be with this guy. Like, it just feels, I don't know, not yes, like destiny.
There's a lot of, well, this is a person I happened to be dating at the age where I decided that it was time to get married. And that's just like musical chairs. It's where it landed. And so now we're married.
Yes.
Did you get any pushback at any point for starting that way, for, you know, for introducing us to the characters that way?
No.
That's really cool.
I don't think so, because it is just such a, it's that show don't tell, like, you know, it's like, this woman is emotionally adventurous. This woman is like willing to risk her life on a coin toss. Like, it just shows you everything you need to know about this character. And I'll continue. The series had gone, I would continue to make wild decisions based on nothing.
And are some of those kind of, I don't know what you call them. You would call them story conferences. If they were so, songwriting tables and those rooms, I mean, a lot of that stuff is just,
that's all
the things you've experienced.
All real. Yes.
God, I love that line where we're just looking for a 90s, 70s, 30s funk Muppets classic ballad. That's also a dance song and maybe in Spanish.
I did have a song that was not that far from that. Like, they, cause you'll get notes from five or six executives and they'll be different notes. They'll be like, what if it sounds like Journey? And they'll be like, you know what song I love? Despacito. And well, you know, but you know what it should be. And then those notes are all written down and you're like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah. It seems like, because when you're a non-musician and you're trying to talk about music, people really struggle, right? They just don't know how to talk about it.
Yes.
You know, when I've like run shows and I have to talk to the composer, sometimes I feel like, God, I'm just sounding so stupid. I don't really know. I don't know anything about music. So I have to just like give this kind of vague feel to it. Hopefully I've not ever said anything as stupid as this.
Kate, you know, and I once got 65 notes on 1 3-minute song from one person, 65 notes. And we're like, we should start over. We're like, you don't like this song. And they were like, no, I love it. And we're like,
I just have 65 little things.
Yeah. And we're like, we promise you don't like this. And they're like, no, we do. But yeah, I counted them. We had 65 notes.
That's incredible.
On 1 3-minute song.
How much did you pitch of where it was going to go in series?
Not that much, actually.
Well, we didn't, but we had, there was, okay. But early on, because we were pitching before we were at Paper Kite, when we were still going to like pods, remember we pitched that pod for Netflix where we had to do like 5 seasons of the show.
Right.
And we were just like, this is bananas. Obviously, like, we don't know exactly what's, but we had 5 seasons of the show at one point.
Did we? Wow. I got to find out.
I've also tried to erase it from my memory, but this just brought it all back because we were just like, at first we're like taking the exercise very seriously. We're like, this is what we're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. This is what like a Netflix pod wants for this. Mm-hmm. And then we were just like, I don't know. They're on fucking Broadway at the end of season 3. We don't know.
Oh, that's right. She gets a Broadway musical. That's right. She ends up writing a Broadway musical about fertility.
Yeah. So
she has a baby with the neighbor.
Okay.
She has a baby with the bisexual neighbor and they have like a open relationship, friendship type of thing.
And yeah, okay. But it was all one of those things because Ricky especially has worked enough and I have worked enough also to know that the moment a cast is assembled and you know, you start doing any stories, you figure out what dynamics work better than like, so we knew it was essentially just like weird a fantasy exercise mm-hmm. of just like, well, okay, this could go in so many different directions, but it would change based on who these people actually are played by and what dynamics work and what is interesting about them. Mm-hmm. But we did have one, like, I'm going to say it was about like a week and a half of just like feverish, just like, let's break 6 years of a show together. Like,
well, those are both great ideas. I like both of those. Mm-hmm. So it was just sort of broad season arc kind of things, right? Not like,
right. But for every character, we did it for all wow.
the, for every all character. Characters.
Yeah.
Okay.
Josh didn't have a lot of like a lot of bad things happen to Josh, but he was always happy.
Yeah, like that he didn't was have always, a lot of growth and change. That was the point of Josh.
The most important thing about Josh is he didn't grow. He didn't change. Bad things happened to him, but he was always happy. Like he was always on his feet and it was like, yeah. Didn't matter.
Haley, the personality-less girlfriend didn't stick around.
No. It's always
yeah. We did this exercise beforehand, but yeah, probably not. I don't think she would have made it.
Unless she'd really, you know, and then if she had really popped in the pilot, she'd be, you know, having like her own storylines season 4. Yeah.
She'd be a spin-off. She'd be our Frasier.
Yeah.
But the pregnancy, you know, I mean, that seems like that, you know, that's one of the big question marks hanging over the pilot is, you know, is the baby. And you had thought you were kind of, that was going to, you're going to wait a season or two for that, or?
I can remember just enough to know that there was, it obviously, because it's such an important part, it came up later when we were talking about it, that like at a point in the next few years, this will be something that she decides to do.
Right.
Like,
and there had to be like, I definitely had to go on a date and tell the guy I was pregnant. Like we definitely had that.
Yes. That. Oh yes. Oh,
yeah. Exactly. I was dating while pregnant.
Like, oh my God, the dating wall. Oh, that was so funny. That was
like, I do have to share something. Don't know if you care, but I'm currently with child, not
yours. Oh my God. No. Writing a fantasy, like a completely fantasy fake show was a lot of fun. Or it was just like, what are we going to do with these people we like? Sure. Let's make her date while pregnant for a while.
Yeah.
Like, that's really fun.
You're going to love Erica. She's great. There's one thing, yeah, small thing. She's currently in her second trimester.
Not looking for a dad. Yeah. Not looking for a dad. Mm-mm. Just trying to fuck around.
Yeah.
She's good.
Mm-hmm. And I guess we talked about this a little bit before the read, but so talk a little bit about the end of this process and what happened after it was written and it's being considered. And
I don't really remember what happened. I do remember that after we'd already written it, that there was some sort of mandate that they wanted sort of middle America kind of shows, and this is not that, you know. And then they didn't have any. I don't think they made any.
Well, shows. there was a regime change, I think. Like, mm-hmm. I think that was part of it also. Like, there was, they didn't really know what they wanted to do. There was a regime change. They maybe bought one multicam pilot, but nothing, or like picked up one multicam pilot, but nothing else. It got far enough that my agents or our age, like our various agents sent us like a list of directors. That was as far as we got in terms of like hopefulness, where it's like, what about these people? Mm-hmm. Then?
Yeah, it felt, the feedback at Fox was very positive and it felt like it was a real possibility that they were going to make it. And, but yeah, they didn't.
But
yeah.
They made almost nothing. So
yeah.
we were in good company, I guess.
Yeah. It seems like it was a year where your odds were so astronomically small of getting it, made, that they were not. And I don't remember exactly that season, whether it was the start of like being folded into Disney was part of it. I don't remember, but I think I do remember that season there was just sort of like, wow, they're just not really even making anything. They're
just not doing it. Yeah.
So by the time that happened, was that sort of not a surprise to you guys, or were
you? I was surprised. I was waiting for them to pick it up. Yeah.
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 Yeah. It was Ricky and I made a good partnership in terms of our like attitudes in general, I think, like, and also just a lot of things about our partnership work really well because we complemented each other very well. I think maybe Ricky will disagree.
I do.
But she would like be optimistic about these things. She'd be like upset about other things. And I would be like down on some things that I'd be like optimistic about. I'd be like, these notes don't mean anything. She's like, these notes are terrible. And then she'd be like, I think we're gonna get picked up. And I was like, we're not getting picked up. Like it was that kind of like, we could do a little, it wasn't that extreme, but I was just like, I have no idea. Like I have no idea because nothing gets picked up. I come from like a point of view of nothing gets picked up. And Ricky, you've never had a fail. Like
Since then, but this was my first thing that didn't. I pitched two TV shows before that and they both got made.
And I was like, I'm riding the coattails of someone who is like, cannot lose. She's fantastic.
And now I can totally lose. No.
But it was one of those things where I was just like, you've taught me to believe again, Ricky.
So Monica, I don't know, cause we didn't really talk about it. I mean, had you sold and written pilots before this one?
Before this, I had sold a pilot that was just like, it was earlier in my career. It's better not to talk that much about it, but it was one of those things where it like I sold it, but it kind of got out of my creative control very quickly in a way that was like eventually I believe they just paid me to stop writing, which I was like
okay.
I was like, I mean, I'm mad, but also this is great. Like so that had been my development experience, and after that I took a break and it was just like I gotta be in a better headspace about how to deal with this kind of thing. And then when I was paired with, when Ricky and I got together, we were like, she was just so confident and so knowledgeable and so knew so many things about how, like, she was like, no, we're going to do it this way. We can do this. We're going to do whatever. And I was like,
yeah. Yes. And I was like, I just fully thought they were going to make it. Like, really did believe that. I was like, let's go make a TV show. I like my mindset was not like, let's pitch a pilot. I was like, let's make a TV series.
Yeah. And not to say that like, it's not that I think I was just disillusioned by this experience. This is also why we pushed back, I think, on the broadcast aspect of it, because like you had so much success in the cable like sphere. I had a demoralizing defeat in the broadcast sphere. So it was like, this is a show where like a guy can tell the girl he's fucking that he's only fucking guys now while he's inside her. Right. Like, do we want to take this to CBS?
So to be fair, CBS was really nice in the room. We all knew they weren't going to make it. They knew we knew. They were great.
It was 100% like a weird friendly where it was like, we know, they know. All right, well, I'll just sit back and just do this thing.
Fine. And we're like, bye. And they're like, great, see ya. we're not going to go on after Big Bang Theory or something.
Was there ever a try to sort of bring it back, bring it back to cable after Fox passed? Was that a play at all?
I sort of had an idea that it could be a sitcom, like a multi-cam.
Like a full-on multi-cam. Okay.
Yeah. And then everyone's kind of like, no.
Yeah. It was an example of like Ricky's really admirable industriousness when she was like, they brought us in this direction. Let's go full blown in this direction. Look at how we can do this. And it worked. I was like, yeah, this does work this way, but that's what, yeah, nothing came of it after that. I think everyone just moved on and was like, let's not make television anymore.
Yeah, I guess it's, you know, there's, it's partly sort of a hangout show that could work. You know, there's a version of this I could see as a multicam. It's just tricky because, you know, you don't want to lose so much of the great edge, even more of that great edge that it has.
Yeah, they let us have like an HIV joke. They let us have they kept a lot in there. Fox, they really did not have a ton of notes.
No, they were good. They were like, you know, go for it. Do this. Does it make any sense? I feel like that's always like, there was the thing where it was like the big moment at the end, which we talked about. Like there had been various different versions of like, what is the big set piece that shows that living like when you're in your late 30s and you're single is great. And we're like, I don't know, what it looks like for us is different from what it looks like on TV. Like, I don't know. Like there was like jetways.
Yeah, they're like, are they in an airport? And we're like, I don't know. I don't think so. We're like, what if we do a toast? And they're like, okay, yeah.
I know. It was amazing how it was not so hard to walk back from the edge of that, where it was like, is this going to be a fireworks display? Like, what is the, like, who is someone going to like shoot off into outer space? But instead it was like, let's do a, like Ricky was like, let's do a toast. And they were like, great.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess the best you can hope for often, since most of these things don't go, is at least the process, you know, sounds like it was pleasant.
It was. It was like a good learning experience. It was cool. Moshe texted me after the table read and he's like, you need to make this into a movie. I'm like, oh, interesting. Mm. It's like, all right. Movie. I'm like, oh, maybe.
The process was great. And like, Ricky and I got to work. I got to work with Ricky, which was fantastic. And then we got to Ricky with Paper Kite, which was great. We talked a little bit beforehand about how we don't know how much like dirt we can spill on this because there wasn't a ton of dirt. It was just like we wrote a pilot,
didn't make it. Yeah.
That's the story of most pilots.
Right now, I'm making an animated movie with them right now.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's called Steps, and it's like, it's not Cinderella, but if it was, it's like the stepsister. It's basically the girls who weren't picked by the prince and them having to find self-actualization. And it's a musical. So Kate and I are writing the music, and I wrote the script, and I think it comes out in 2 years. They're like, we have like a release date, which is hilarious.
Wow.
It's amazing. Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
So cool. And Monica, what are you up to?
I've been working on trying to bring to life that it's a really wild exercise because it's the first pilot, like the first real pilot that I wrote that I told you about the elderly former Broadway actress. And now I did like a rewrite on it not that long ago because it's old. And there's been at least excitement amongst my like reps to try to turn this into like, let's try to make a go at this thing. And it's been a wild, interesting learning process, only from taking like a real old script that was like, and then trying to like reverse engineer a pitch from it and like get actresses attached, and they're all between the ages of 65 and 87. So it's all like, it's mostly, we talked about like writing a fantasy series. I think I'm doing it right now. So
that's great. Here at Dead Pilot Society, we love it when things are brought back from the dead. You know, it's, I love hearing that something's getting revisited. It sounds like such a cool idea. And I'm sure all of those actresses are amazing, that you're, you know, the people you're considering are the people that are just the total pros and who are going to be incredible. Thank you guys so much for letting us read this and for just putting together that great cast. It was just so much
fun.
Thanks
for having us. It was really fun to revisit. I hadn't looked at the pilot since, you know, when we made it.
Yeah, yeah, me either. It was great. Thank you so much. It was such a delight. I was like, I texted Ricky. I was like, Ricky, this was funny. We wrote a good pilot.
I love hearing that. I love when writers feel vindicated by these reads because it's good. It's really good. It's just a really good script. So thank you. It was a total pleasure and great to talk to you guys.
Awesome. Thank you
so much.
Great interview, Andrew. Thank you for doing that. Folks, if you've gone the extra mile to become a Max Fund member, thank you so much for making the show possible. We're able to bring our show to you independent of outside influence. This is genuinely the show that Andrew and Noah and I want to see. And so it's the one we want to make.
No one tells us which pilots to read. No one tells us which actors to cast. We are able to do this. It's the opposite of what Ben and I do in our in our real jobs as television writers, where we have to listen to all kinds of people interfering with us. Here, we get to be completely independent because of you, our listener. We really can't thank you enough. So if you haven't had a chance to become a member yet, you can do it. You can do it right now. Go to MaximumFun.org/join. MaximumFun.org/join. We only ask you this once a year. So please take the time right now while you're thinking about it and join, boost, upgrade. You'll get lots of cool stuff and you will enable us to keep doing this show that we love making and we hope you love listening to. So Ben, I love getting to do this with you once a year.
It's nice to see you once a year.
I know. But thank you all. Thank you. Thank you, listeners. And we will hit you up again in a year.
Don't make us do it. Just if you become a member now, then we don't have to come back for a whole year. Right. Otherwise, we're going to do this every month.
Yeah. And if you haven't mentioned it, I'm going to mention it one last time. Go to MaximumFun.org/join. Thank you on behalf of Ben and Noah Findling and myself, Andrew Reich. Thank you so much for supporting the show and for listening.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.